We're actually starting a new series today called More Than Enough, a little bit like that song we just sang. My name's Matthew, by the way. I'm the lead pastor, so welcome. But we're starting a new series today, and I don't know whether you caught that video at the very beginning of the service where we had a doctor talking about this sort of the science of habits and breaking habits and that kind of thing. And this is the time of year where we set a lot of new goals, we reflect a little bit on our lives and maybe, you know, try to deal with some of the what we might consider bad habits in our lives and that kind of thing. But there's also this, I think, probably a deeper reflection that we do around these times of the years, which isn't just about like surface issues, certain habits and that kind of thing, but a sense of what's the meaning to life? What's the meaning to my life? You know, am I feeling fulfilled and satisfied? Is my life the way I want it to be? And we kind of, take various degrees of courage to look deeper at ourselves and reflect on ourselves. And what we're going to do in this series is look at that kind of question, this issue of meaning, fulfillment. Today we're going to talk particularly about what does a satisfied life look like, right? I mean, and I'm afraid I'm not going to give you the answer to that question of how to actually live a satisfied life, but we'll explore it a little bit. But that's the theme of this series. And I think we're all in this together. You know, the video we saw at the beginning was, that's off the BBC website. It's like something I think that's universal to humankind is we all want to live good lives. And some of that might be a very personal thing, you know, personal happiness and fulfillment. Some of that is more of a societal or corporate thing. We might want to live lives that contribute to society and bring about justice and some kind of fairness and goodness for more than just ourselves, but humanity as a whole. And in some respects, our desires have a sort of universal or a higher moral sense to them. We want to live good lives, right lives, in some kind of moral, higher truth kind of way. All those factors, and probably many more, influence us to search for meaning, to search for purpose, to search for fulfillment. And as I said, we're going to explore that over the next few weeks. And we've called the series More Than Enough. There's some material for this series as well, which you can find out in the lobby, in the on the welcome desk. You can download it online as well. And there's lots of discussion questions and reflections and exercises, some of those to be done on our own. But it's really set up to be done within the context of community. So just want to encourage everybody to get into a group. There's information outside, again, on the welcome desk. Or you can come and see us at Cedar Ridge in 7 minutes right after the service. If you want to get connected to a group, we have many groups that meet during the week here at Cedar Ridge, or, you know, not just on the premises, but in different homes. And these materials and this journey that we're on is just so much more fulfilling, I think, when we do it with other people. So if you're not able to get in the group, get a copy of the material and go through it with somebody, a trusted friend or a partner of some kind that you can work through these issues with in the context of community. So More Than Enough is really an assertion that we here believe that following Jesus, the spiritual quest, what we called last year the God quest, is that's the meaning to life. That brings us to purpose, brings us to fulfillment, brings us to satisfaction. And that's what we're going to explore over the next few weeks, in particular, looking at issues to do with letting go, simplicity, you know, living or simplifying our lives, and issues like fasting, you know, this ancient tradition, not just only unique to Christianity, but to most religious traditions, this sort of intentional going without in order to find deeper truth. So we're going to explore all those for the next 7 weeks. Today's kind of introductory, and as we often do, you know, we want to step back a little bit from this topic and maybe ask some questions and think about even some struggles and some concerns we might have as we go through the next few weeks. And sort of to help us with that, I've got three questions that I know I have about this whole topic. And they both have with them a kind of a concern that, you know, it's personal to me in some respects. But I think maybe it will, you know, you'll be able to relate to that as well. So let's just look at these questions as we go into it. There's three of them. How real is this? How likely is this? How true is this? So this whole idea of God is more than enough, right? How real is that? I mean, what does that even mean? when we think, we've just been singing songs like, your love is more precious than silver, more costly than gold. We've been singing that God is more than enough. Well, what does that exactly mean? That could be just religious platitudes, right? And when we talk about subjects like this, I think we have to stay grounded in some kind of reality, right? That we don't just slip into religious jargon, religious platitudes, or even hide behind our religion, but we're very real about, okay, what does that mean? In what way is God satisfying? In what way is God fulfilling? How does that translate into real life? Now, what I'm not meaning there is that we have to be all concrete about our responses to that, or our the way we follow in that context. There's all kinds of mystery and doubt and uncertainty, but I guess what I'm talking about here is being honest, and a word we would use here a lot is authentic, that we wouldn't fake it in any way. So that would be the caution. Let's not make this some kind of super religious thing, but a very real thing that's rooted in real life and is a response to questions that everybody is asking all around the world all the time. Where do we find meaning and fulfillment? It's a very real human question. And that sort of leads on to the next one. How likely is this? We might feel like, I want to really engage with that, but what hope is there that I'm really going to find any kind of answers? What hope is there? Perhaps even flipping on it, is there actually a high chance of disappointment here? That we might pursue some meaning. We might trust that, in this way of following Jesus that we talk about here, in this spiritual quest that we talk about here, there's meaning. We might have hope that there is, but probably many of us along the way have been disappointed, right? We don't necessarily experience that all the time. And it almost can feel like, God's just this sort of spiritual thing that we deal with at certain spiritual times on Sundays in particular, but my real life is, how does it really connect to that? And I think the concern there, or the caution that I would have as I go into this series myself and for us as a community, is that we wouldn't fake it, right? That it's going to take courage for us to open ourselves to the possibility that this might be a reality. And we might feel pressured that we've got to experience something a certain way. And that's, ironically, that's the antithesis of the way of Jesus. Jesus is not about pressure. Jesus is all about setting us free. So let's not, as we consider these issues, let's not let them become a burden or a pressure or any kind of forcefulness to them. But let's let them be light and let them set us free. And, I think that's where the challenge really is for all of us to find our own way. All right, so we're going to talk about things here from the front. There's stuff in the material, some questions and that kind of thing. But, the reality is I'm not trying to make you agree with me. And nobody speaking from the front here is going to try and make you agree with me. We're going to challenge certain, perhaps some traditions that may have not been helpful in the past or might not be helpful now. We want to share our own experience and what's been helpful to us. But each of us has to find our own way. And Jesus is asked questions about what's the answer to this, what's the answer to that, Jesus says, follow me. It's an invitation into a journey. And that's what this is, an invitation into a journey. That is our own unique journey. But every unique journey here is cherished, no matter what it is. It's cherished. And it's different for every single one of us. Now, that can be lonely, right? In one sense, if I said, here's the definitive truth, or what I think is, and everybody fit in with that, that would be at one level off-putting, of course, but at another level it's, we can all be part of that, and we're all on the same page, and, great. But that, I don't think that leads to real growth. That doesn't lead to real transformation. So we're taking this unique journey, but it can be lonely, so that's why we need one another. So again, as we go through this material, as we go through this series, really want to encourage you to connect with other people. That's the beauty of being in a community like this, and then being in even smaller communities, the groups that we have, that wrestle honestly with these issues. And to be honest, we need an atmosphere of acceptance, right? My unique journey, I'll share some things about my journey today. I'm confident that you're not going to judge me or condemn me because of my journey. You're going to listen to that and let it challenge you, and I'm going to listen to yours, and we'll challenge one another. And as we go through this together, acceptance can create this empowering context where we're not lonely, even though we're taking the challenge to follow individually and uniquely ourselves. And then the third question is, how true is this? So, I mean, you know, is there a satisfying life to be lived? I mean, is fulfillment and meaning possible? Is that the point to life? I mean, this quest we're on, does it have some kind of end? Does it have some kind of goal to it? How true is that? And I think the caution here is that I think we all know intuitively that part of the secret to life, if you like, or part of the meaning to life, is not only about finding the answer to our longings and our needs and our desires and getting what we want, but also to some degree being satisfied with what we have right now. Right? So, and you know, we just went through a series before the holidays about thankfulness and gratefulness, which was very much a reflection on what we have and that being an empowering influence in our lives, gratefulness being a source of empowerment to us. This series is leaning more into perhaps what we don't have, right? And the longing we have for more, but we have to hold those two things in tension. And it seems that, you know, that Jesus is usually, in the truth that Jesus shares, there's some kind of paradox, right? And that's perhaps this paradox of, on the one hand, being satisfied with what we have, but on the other hand, leaning into there's more than this and being conscious of the fact that we long for more. So sort of, holding those two things in dynamic equilibrium. And, perhaps what Jesus came to do and came to teach us and to show us was living life on that cusp of the paradox, where it's a little bit like, you know, the whole idea of we are fully accepted. God completely loves us. We are fully accepted completely the way we are right now. And yet we also are aware of the need to change, right? It's as though the past and intersects with the future at this present moment. And we are in that present moment. But we can look back with all kinds of regret on our past and reject ourselves and think we're terrible. And that can almost keep us from the future, I think, in many respects. Or we can say, I can't affect my past. I have to accept myself because no matter how hard I try, it's in the past, right? I can't change. None of us right now can change what has been in our story so far, right? We just can't. We can't. But if we can accept ourselves in that, then we have the confidence to lean into the future, and that means something different. That means change. That means transformation. Right? So there's these. The way of Jesus is full of these paradoxes, and I think Jesus is calling us to live in the cusp of that paradox, in that place of dynamic equilibrium. And if we lean too far one way or the other, that's where we get kind of whacked out. Right? And you think of this issue of satisfaction. If we lean too much towards being content with the way things are, with what we have, there's no tension to drive us forward. I mean, you think about that in terms of the human creative process. I mean, part of the reason humanity has evolved the way we have is because there's that leaning into the future that things could be different. Things don't have to be this way. There's that sense of longing, that sense of dissatisfaction. So if we just live in this satisfied with what we have realm, we're going to get out of whack. But if all we're ever feeling is, you know, I've got to have more than this. This isn't enough. I've got to have more. We're going to live in a very tense, anxious, angstful state of being. And that's going to be destructive to us as well, right? And, you know, we all lean different ways based on our personality. But can we come to this place of, perhaps we might call it spiritual maturity or spiritual dynamic equilibrium? That's one of the things I think we've got to wrestle with as we go through this series. Okay, so we're going to sort of explore that over the next few weeks. Let's just look at some words of Jesus, just some brief words of Jesus to sort of throw us into this. In John 10, chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus says this, "The thief comes only to kill and destroy." That's relevant to something he previously said. But here's the poignant part for us here. "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. Now that's something we, scripture we read quite a lot here, that Jesus came that we might have life and have it to the full. So Jesus is talking about real, fulfilled, deep, meaningful life. And he's saying, look, if you follow me, there's this spiritual pathway that leads to and is fulfilling and meaningful, right? So, you know, right up front, let's say we're daring to say that Jesus is calling us on this journey. Jesus is calling us to it. Now, what does, though, a deep, fulfilled, meaningful life look like? I mentioned today the topic is satisfaction. What does a satisfied life look like? And we might have to recalibrate that a little bit, maybe, and we're going to look at some scriptures and some a story about Jesus that might help us do that. And also take a look at, okay, well, you know, if we can sort of perhaps redefine a few things, what might lead us to that? So to help us with that, I want us to sort of do a thought experiment this morning, or a couple of thought experiments. And the first one is this. Think of a time in your life where you did feel really satisfied, like fulfilled, like life had real meaning and purpose. And you might feel, well, that's never happened. And I don't think any of us would say that was, you know, that's happened to us 100%. But think of a time like that. And if you can't think of a time like that, imagine what that might be like. What might it be like to feel completely fulfilled, totally fulfilled, right? So just sort of capture that in your mind. Then imagine that I have a machine up here that it's, and don't misinterpret this, it's a satisfaction machine. Just don't let your mind go anywhere unpleasant with that, right? But just imagine that I had a machine here that you could plug into and it would give you 100%, 24/7 for the rest of your life, that feeling of satisfaction. And you just sit there for the rest of your life and you have that fantastic experience, that fantastic feeling. Or maybe I could give you a drug that would give you that feeling forever, right? It's not, you know, it's not, there's no low after it. It's like, this is forever, non-stop satisfaction, right? Would we plug into that machine? Just think about that for a moment. Would you plug into that machine? If I could guarantee to you for the rest of your life, all you need to do is sit there, plug into the machine and have that satisfied life. Would you plug into that machine? Now, I don't know whether you go here, but one of the, based on my personality quirks, for good or for bad, I know that one of the thoughts there is, well, that does sound pretty appealing, but it's all good for me feeling like that, but there's a whole world out there. I wouldn't really feel, I'd feel very guilty about just having that. That seems very self-centered, right? I'm feeling really satisfied, everybody else is struggling and suffering. But what if that machine also took away any feelings of guilt, right? Any feelings of guilt. What if, that brought a bit of laughter there, right? Because we struggle with guilt probably, don't we? So imagine if I said to you, okay, not only are you going to feel absolutely fantastic, there's not a shred of guilt whatsoever. You're just oblivious. Would you plug into the machine? Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, right? But you might, I don't know what you would do, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, I don't think we would plug in, right? And those of you who would have plugged in are probably feeling really ashamed right now. Right? But we'll go, I don't think I would want to plug into that. And here, there's a couple of reasons why. Somehow, that's not real life, right? There's something that seems appealing about that, but there's something that's not akin to the human condition. We experience all kinds of things in life that are light and dark, good and bad, easy and hard. We have pain and suffering as well as we have joy and satisfaction. And there's something more complex and more beautiful about the human life than just being in a state of satisfaction, right? Some of the hardest things in our lives, times when we've perhaps been, you know, we've lost things or suffered things or we've had to make sacrifices, those are some of the more meaningful times in our lives. Those are some of the times that have not just transformed us and made us better people, which is always a good thing, right? But actually, somehow we find meaning in that struggle. Somehow we find meaning. That seems to be the nature of the human condition. And secondly, we're social beings, right? We're relational beings. We're community beings. And so we can't, there's something about just being satisfied ourselves, regardless of everybody else, that does just not seem right. And that's partly because it's in the relationships with other people that we find meaning and fulfillment. Right? It's in the difficulties in our relationships. It's when we lose that we really know what love is. Right? You can't love and not feel the pain of loss. There's always loss involved in love. You can't love and not have to make sacrifices. You think of the loved ones in our families or the deep friendships we have where we do without certain things and make certain sacrifices because we love those people. Well, that's sort of not, it's going without something on our own part in order to do something that has much more meaning for us, right? So this is a complex issue. That's all I'm saying. And if you were about to plug into that machine, all is forgiven. Don't worry. Plus, it doesn't exist. So it was a thought experiment, right? So let's come back in the room and be, you know, we're out of that experimental mindset. But, you know, this is what I mean by we've perhaps got to rethink what are we after in life? What are we after in life? When Jesus says, I came that you might have life and have it to the full, what was he really talking about? And the only way I really know how to express that myself or with my limited, very limited understanding about what I think Jesus is talking about and where Jesus is leading us is this life of love. And that, of course, could be, going back to the questions we talked about earlier, that could just be a platitude. That just be, oh yeah, love, great, yeah, God is love. How many times have we said that before? But what does that really mean? Well, Jesus, let's sort of look at a couple of scriptures that I think get at this. Jesus, when asked, what is the greatest commandment? And the commandments, if you think about the Ten Commandments, represent the law, which represents this way that the Hebrew people were given to live that was meant to bring about fulfillment and peace and happiness. Jesus sums them up like this: love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it: love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. So what Jesus is doing there is taking the Ten Commandments, which, you know, there's five of them that are about loving God and five of them that are about loving other people, essentially. And he's breaking those down and saying, look, love God, love God, love yourself, love other people. If we could get that that oneness, that communion going, then perhaps we would experience love and experience a fulfilled life. Jesus is calling us to something more than just our own self-satisfaction and into something that has to do with love, which doesn't just affect us but affects other people. And he kind of hits at that multiple times, talking about what love might look like. So in Mark chapter 8, he says, he called to the crowd along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me, for the gospel, will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? So Jesus seems to be saying, actually, the secret to this is, or part of the secret to this is sacrifice. Love inevitably means sacrifice. So love inevitably means letting go of something. But in that letting go, according to Jesus, we gain so much more. We receive so much more. And that's he emphasizes this again in as I said, numerous times, but in John chapter, I think it's 15, yep. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And obviously Jesus is there, seems to be prophetically talking about his own death. Now it's interesting to bear in mind, when we talk about carrying your cross, bearing a cross, taking up your cross, we're listening to that language through the lens of, well, we know Jesus got crucified and we know Jesus came back from the dead. You know, those are the story of the crucifixion, the story of the resurrection resonate very hard with us. So we look back at Jesus's statement here about carrying your cross through that lens. He's talking about sacrificial love as in his crucifixion. But remember, when the listeners are hearing that, they've no idea Jesus is going to be crucified. So there's not that association. So this whole thing of carrying your cross is what they would have commonly associated it with, which was Roman execution. And the carrying your cross was the cross beam of the cross on which you were going to be executed, the patibulum. You would walk through as a condemned criminal. You would walk through publicly the streets to the place of crucifixion. So carrying your cross is an act of rebellion, if you like, because the only people that were crucified in the Roman system were slaves and people who committed treason. People who were not Roman citizens, put it like this. And if you were a Roman citizen, you would not be crucified unless you committed treason. So crucifixion was an execution of rebels, people who were deemed to have no identity. And so I think what Jesus is getting at here is, look, if you're married to the way of the world, if you're married to, in this instance, the Roman Empire, which is the, and that's the Roman Empire was the power then. That's how you get what you want. That's how you have to negotiate and deal with and compromise with the Roman Empire in order to have a meaningful life. If you rebel against the Roman Empire, you're going to get crucified. I think Jesus is saying, all that has been set up, if you like, and let's think about this somewhat metaphorically, all that has been set up for us, wealth, success, the American dream, whatever it is that is set up for us as that's meaningful life, he's saying that to really experience life, you've almost got to rebel against that. And I say almost because, you know, I think we've got to be careful about that kind of language, because it doesn't mean that a lot of those things I just listed off there are necessarily bad. But when they control us and when they have power over us, they become destructive. And we're going to read a story now where Jesus sort of gets at this issue of how things can have a hold on us, and that things that may, in and of their own right, not necessarily be bad, but we all have things that hold us and have power over us that keep us from letting go and being loved and loving and entering into this journey that is a life worth living. And we're going to look at that story in Mark chapter 10. I'm going to read it to us. It's up on the screen already, which probably means Matthew, get a move on. Verse 17, as Jesus started on his way, a man ran up to him and fell on his knees before him. Good teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Why do you call me good? Jesus answered. No one is good except God alone. Interesting. We're not even going to talk about that. Just an interesting statement there. You know the commandments. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. You shall not defraud, and honor your father and mother. Teacher, he declared, all these I've kept since I was a boy. Jesus looked at him and loved him. One thing you lack, he said. Go sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. At this, the man's face fell. He went away sad because he had great wealth. Jesus looked around at his disciples. How hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of God. The disciples were amazed at his words. But Jesus said again, children, how hard it is to enter the kingdom of God. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God. The disciples were even more amazed and said to each other, who then can be saved? Jesus looked at them and said, with man this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God. Okay, so let's just unpack that story a little bit. This character has become known as the rich young ruler, because that story, that's from the Gospel of Mark, but it appears in the other two synoptic Gospels, Matthew and Luke, and in one he's called rich, well, in all of them he's called rich, but in one he's called young, and in the other he's called a ruler, so he's become known as the rich young ruler. In this instance, we just have a man who turns out at the end is wealthy. Okay, he's a wealthy man. So here is a man who is, by the standards of that day, successful. He's got a load of money. Now, it's interesting, there is an implication, I think, here, that he might be in some kind of collusion or compromise or flying under the radar with Rome, right? For him to be a ruler, for him to have this kind of power, for him to have been this successful, he's probably had to work the system a bit. So there are some allusions there. But essentially, this, when, on the face of it, this is a good man, right? Here is a good man. He's religious, you know. When Jesus says to him, you know, follow the commandments, he said, I've done all of those. And Jesus doesn't say, you're lying. Come on, there's this one and there's that one. He seems to be a religiously good guy, and not really necessarily a hypocrite. I mean, he seems like genuine, right? We have this he rushes up to Jesus and throws himself on the floor. That's an act of humility. In the culture, the ancient Middle Eastern culture, that's an act of humility. That's kind of really submitting himself. And he clearly respects Jesus. And this is somebody who seems somewhat desperate and is willing to acknowledge his desperation. I think the other sign here we have that he's a good person is the disciples kind of like him, right? They're not thinking, "Now this goody-goody," or "Hey, this rich cheat," or "Yeah, now you're going to get what's coming to you," because Jesus is about other things. They seem to be like, "Oh, this guy, he's a dude. He's a good guy. This is," I mean, and so they're amazed when Jesus says how hard it is for him to enter the kingdom of heaven, right? So all round, this guy seems like a good guy, but he's not happy. He's not fulfilled. Despite all the trappings he has, he's not happy. And there's something missing. And he desperately wants to address this issue. And he comes to Jesus in this very desperate kind of way. Jesus responds to him really beautifully. I mean, it's just such a genius, compassionate, Jesus-like way of response. He looks at him. First of all, it says he looks at him and he loves him. He has nothing but love for this guy. And I think we need to just stop and absorb that for a moment, that in all our needs, in all our wanting and desiring, in all our suffering and our losing, Jesus has nothing but love for us. God is love, and we are fully accepted right where we are. Doesn't mean we haven't got to change, but we are fully accepted. So Jesus looks at this guy, and he has compassion on him, and I think we can read here that Jesus has compassion because it's, oh, you're bound up. You're a slave to something. You think you've got it together, but you know you haven't deep down, and you're a slave to something. And then he sort of reaches in and with surgical precision just points to this very thing that the guy, and you know, maybe it's one of many, who we don't know, but Jesus points to something that is hindering him, that is keeping him enslaved, if you like, and that's his money. Now, I don't think we should neglect or put aside the socioeconomic implications of this passage, right? About wealthy people, and by the world standards, pretty much everyone in this room is wealthy. So we need to bear that in mind, right? I think there are socioeconomic applications. But I want to just broaden it out a little bit and just say that was this guy's issue. Money was this guy's issues. There are many other issues to which we are enslaved, to which we are in bondage, if you like. So let's think of it in the broader, perhaps more metaphorical sense. But Jesus points at this issue. And the irony here and the tragedy here is that despite this guy's desperation, he walks away sad. It's like the pain of letting go is greater than the pain of the dissatisfaction he's experiencing at the moment. And he walks away. And all we have is that Jesus says, Jesus loves him, right? So Jesus doesn't judge him. Jesus doesn't try to control him. You know, it would be very easy to just say, wait a second, you know, like, let's talk about this. I mean, that guy would have been a great recruit, I'm sure. But Jesus is not controlling, because control comes from fear. And fear is the antithesis of love. And Jesus has nothing but love. Jesus isn't trying to manipulate the situation. It's an invitation. And that's true for all of us here. Jesus isn't trying to control us. Jesus isn't just trying to answer all our needs and bail us out of all our problems and fix this and that. Jesus is inviting us into this journey that is challenging. But to do so, we have to let go of some things. And so we have this statement by Jesus at the end that, you know, it's impossible, because the disciples are like, what? You know, what's going on here? Jesus says, well, it seems impossible, but all things are possible with God. And I think what Jesus is implying there is that this journey, this way of Jesus, is a way that empowers us to do the impossible, to let go of things that have enslaved us, to let go of the things that hold us, so that we can actually be free to love ourselves, to love God, to love one another. That's this life that Jesus is inviting us into. And it's possible. It's possible. But as I say, we have to let go of some things. It's like Jesus is there to empower us. I think Jesus said there is power, there's empowerment to live that kind of life. But we're invested in it. We're engaged in it. We can't. It's not just like zap and then we just flow along with it. We have to engage, and that requires us to to make some decisions, to take some action. And in this instance, we're focusing on letting go. That's not the only thing we have to do, right? But that's kind of the theme of this series. And it's certainly the theme of this teaching here that Jesus, or this story is telling us about Jesus. So let's think a little bit about what are the kinds of things that we end up getting enslaved to. Because I dare say that every single one of us in this room has a money issue. And by that I mean a rich young ruler money issue. In other words, something that we could point at, Jesus could point out, say, just let go of that. Right? And now I think there's a lot of things that are like money, you know, comfort, prestige, academic prowess or acknowledgement. You know, we have all kinds of things that that we might be chasing after, that we think if we could just have that, the perfect job, the perfect salary, the perfect family, the perfect this, you know, there's all sorts of things that we might chase after as being, that's what I need to be happy. And they might exercise control over us and actually ironically imprison us, right? So and some of those things might feel almost like positive, good things, but they've taken over. And some of them might be clearly kind of dark. They might be bad habits, even addictions. And those things might be somewhat obvious. But we also, I think, have a lot of dysfunctions that enslave us, right? Anxieties, fears, insecurities, jealousies, envy, self-pity, all sorts of different dysfunctions that have become part of our life that seem to govern us and dominate us, and they come back and haunt us time and time again, and they affect our relationships, they affect the way we live our lives. Let me share. I've shared before here that I'm a very fearful person. Right, one of my struggles is with fear and anxiety. And growing up, for good or for bad, I grew up being very afraid of people and also very afraid of outcomes with people. So I felt that my responsibility was always to make people happy, and that's something I needed to do. And I don't want to get my psychotherapy is to be done in private, right, not out here. But there's all sorts of reasons for that. But what it meant was that in all kinds of circumstances, especially in my family, if people weren't doing okay, then I felt like I needed to fix it. Like in some way, it was my fault because I was the fixer, right? Some of you might be able to identify with this. Others of you will say, take him to the loony bin immediately. But that's been some of my struggle. And so I've taken that into adult life, and at times that has been crippling to me. It led to all kinds of struggle and anxiety. But here's the deal. There's something about that I hate. I detest it. I feel like, God, if I could just live my life fear-free, what if I was to totally let go of fear? Just let it go. How amazing that would be. How amazing that would be. And yet, I don't want to let it go. Right? I'm addicted to it. My life has wrapped itself around it. And it's become a friend to me. It's become a way I survive. It's become a way I prevent myself getting hurt. Like if I was to live my life fearlessly, I would probably get hurt. If I was to live my life fearlessly, I might actually offend some other people. Hopefully appropriately. Right? I hope you can sort of get what I mean here. We have all kinds of things, right? I've just shared what my one is, and the specifics of that are not the issue. But we have all kinds of things that we actually don't want to let go of. We don't, you know, and we come back round to them, and it might be anger or criticism, or where we've made our life manageable by just pushing other people away, and keeping people afraid of us or a safe enough distance so that people don't come too close because we lose control there. And then, you know, life's going to be too risky. We have these protective mechanisms. So I think it's not just the obvious things like money and comfort and possessions, but it's our dysfunctions. It's the way that we've become. And actually, I think perhaps if I fell in front of Jesus and Jesus said, and I said, Jesus, I want to live a meaningful life, Jesus would be, let go of fear. And I've got to think, oh, shoot, I'm not sure I want to do that. And I'm probably, I've noticed in my life, really, the only times I've made more progress on the journey of letting go of fear has been when the pain of staying the same has outweighed the pain of letting go. But it's an invitation. And this comes back again, I think, to life isn't just about being happy and satisfied. Sometimes we need the pain, we need the loss to draw us into the kind of change that we need. But the trouble is we run from our pain. We don't see that as a good thing. We retract from it rather than follow it and say, where is this taking me? What is this saying about me? Is it leading me perhaps into a deeper understanding where I can be engage more with the divine presence that is going to liberate me and set me free? So these are, I think, deep challenges that we're going to take into this series and wrestle with. And let's, as we do that, I just want to, we're going to wrap up here and then just have a little moment of quiet where we invite God's presence. But just a couple of sort of practicalities here. First of all, in all of this series, in all of this quest, in all of life, let's come back to love. Jesus looked at him and loved him, right? But wherever we're at right now, with all our pain and all our longing and all the things we cling to, we are nothing but loved, right? So this is not about condemnation. There's nothing condemning about Jesus. He's just invited this guy into freedom. The guy has walked away. We are loved, completely loved. And I think we have to remember that and return to that all the time. But I'm going to share a couple of things here very quickly that are in the material. You know, I mentioned there's some material to work through. And these, I'm going to just touch on two issues that are explored a little more, or give you an opportunity to explore them more in the material. But let me just touch on them to give a little bit of context. What keeps us from letting go? So we talked about the kinds of things that we don't want to let go of. What keeps us from letting go of those? Well, we talked about some of these: fear, distractions. We fill our lives with other things to kind of compensate and sort of plug that hole and cover it up. I think you can see the rich young ruler doing that. He kind of, I think, pops out from behind his distractions for a moment, falls at Jesus' feet, and then promptly jumps right back in there saying, I don't want to do that. So the distractions can keep us, and again, you can explore that a little bit in the material. Disappointment. What if I let go? And then I'm found wanting, or it doesn't work. And we may have had experiences of that in the past. So there's an opportunity to look at this, and as I said, to share with a friend, to share in a group. That's kind of vulnerable, but hearing other people's stories and embracing them and being embraced ourselves, I think can really help with these challenging issues. And then there's the issue, what kind of practices might help us? And we're going to practice different things throughout this series. There's lots of exercises and practices to be done in the week, and we'll practice some of them in these moments here. Again, that looks a bit weird, sensual practices. What I mean by that, there are practices that we can do that we engage our senses, like relationships and nature and art and music, practices that help connect us to God and the fullness of life that God wants us to experience. So there's some things we can do there that are really, really positive, and there's an example of that in the exercise this week in the material. There's non-sensual practices, though, things like silence and solitude, meditation, contemplative prayer, different ways that we kind of realize, sometimes our senses can distract us. They're not necessarily helpful. And we need to center ourselves and kind of recenter on that longing, recenter on the reality of God within us. And so we'll explore some of those practices. And then there's abstinence. Again, a lot of these have a very sort of sexual connotation to them, I think. But anyway, I'm not meaning that kind of abstinence. Maybe I do. But I'm meaning more when we go without things deliberately. And going without things, I think it helps us get in touch with longings, get in touch with the fact that some of the things that maybe we're going to do without have been distractions. It also, I think, my wife and I have been doing a bit of fasting, food and drink type fasting recently, and it makes you appreciate a good meal, and the beauty of food and the communion of food, the fact that there's a coming together around food and that kind of thing. So it can accentuate the beauty of things that we've eventually started taking for granted, and that they're not fulfilling anymore because they're just, they're one of many things that we do. So anyway, there's some information in the material about those kinds of things. But right now, And we'll do communion right after this, but we're just going to take a moment of silence. And maybe we can just pop the lights down a little bit. So maybe you could just close your eyes. Nobody's going to play any tricks on you or anything like that. But after this moment of silence, we're going to sing a song and then we'll have communion. And the way we do communion here is you know, it's gluten-free crackers and grape juice, and you serve yourselves at the front, serve one another, shall I say, at the front or in the middle here, and then servers will appear at the sides. And there's other things you can do. You can write out prayers and post them in those little windows towards the back on each side. We'll have people at the back who would love to pray with you if you're carrying a burden this morning. You can light candles. And communion is a time of response for us. But I want to encourage you just to sort of stay in a reflective place for these next few minutes. We're going to have a moment of silence followed by a song, and then we'll just go straight into communion. But let's just close our eyes and let's just invite God's presence. So God is here. God is everywhere. God is in us and around us. So by that, we just mean opening our hearts and acknowledging that God is here. And let's kind of put ourselves, perhaps, in the role of the rich young ruler. But we've not walked away yet. We're on our knees. Maybe we could just go to that place, even, in our mind's eye and in our hearts, of just being laid bare. We've come out into the open. And we know what we're struggling with. We know what we might feel enslaves us. We might be in touch with our pain, our loss, our sense of frustration or dissatisfaction. And let's just hold that there. And that might feel somewhat uncomfortable, but let's just hold that openly to God in God's presence right now. And let us feel the gaze of love. We are being looked at and nothing but loved. And we could get up and walk away, or we could stay there. Over these next few weeks, we could hold back, or we could sink deep in. And we may not know the answers right now. We may not have much hope right now. But we're here right now. And so hold that vulnerably. And don't walk away. So as we stay in that prayerful place, I think you could just stay quiet. We'll keep the lights down. Let's just sing this song together.